I'm Tanzina Vega, and this is The Takeaway. The Anti-Defamation League has added 36 entries to its extensive catalog of extremist symbols. That's everything from racist hand signs and the Nazi swastika to, most recently, white supremacist and murderer Dylan Roof's bowl-shaped haircut.
Symbols just play a very important role in sharing ideas, potentially recruiting, and often can be weaponized to harass and intimidate.
That's Oren Siegel, director of ADL's Center on Extremism.
Every day we're coming across new language, new codes, new symbols that are used, and we use the hate symbols database to inform the public about what they need to know.
The ADL tracks extremist movements and individuals from across the ideological spectrum, and its database, which was first developed in 2000, now has over 200 symbols in its catalog.
The criteria that goes into our hate symbols database is the volume of usage by extremists and haters of specific symbols. Many of them are actually logos of extremist groups, tattoos, the slogans that they chant.
For more on these symbols, the list, and why it matters, I'm joined now by Cynthia Miller Idris, a professor of sociology and education at American University, and Heidi Byrick, the director of the Southern Poverty Law Center's Intelligence Project. Thanks to you both for being on the show.
Thanks for having us.
Cynthia, the roots of these historical roots of these symbols, how did symbols of hate become a means for extremist groups to convey a certain message?
Well, symbols of hate have been used by extremist groups for decades. The Nazi Party was using runic symbols as some of their insignia, was using coded symbols like the number 88 to stand for the eighth letter of the alphabet for HH for Heil Hitler. So there's a long history of these kinds of symbols being used. I think what we're seeing now is kind of ramping up and an increase in the way in which they can be shared and rapidly evolve on social media.
And we've seen how some of these symbols have evolved over time. Here's what Oren Siegel from the ADL had to tell us.
Over the years, we have recognized that people are more likely in many ways to come across hate imagery and symbols on their phones or on their social media feeds rather than in the public.
Cynthia, with social media, has the nature of these symbols changed as well? I mean, are we seeing different things now?
I think we're seeing, we see the same kinds of coding happen with the alphanumeric codes, the substitution of numbers and letters of the alphabet for words and phrases. But because social media itself is such a visual medium, we're also seeing a much more rapid evolution of hateful symbols and cartoon-like images. So that you're not even seeing someone, you know, you're not only seeing someone reference something like Dylan Roof's haircut as a bowl cut, but also an actual kind of cartoon image of that haircut appear on various kinds of figures. And so the visual nature of it really does lend itself well to a different kind of evolution of the way that the symbols can reflect different kinds of hate.
Heidi, did you notice any trends in the symbols that were added this year? Anything that stood out to you?
Well, I think the biggest issue is really what Cynthia was just talking about, is that we have so many visual symbols. I think one particular symbol that really leapt out over the last few years was this Pepe the Frog cartoon image, right, of this green frog that became deeply interconnected with white supremacist memes and thinking. So it's the visualization that you have. I'd also say that things are evolving so rapidly. One of the things that the ADL added to its list was this OK symbol, which is a hand gesture that used to be considered somebody saying OK to something, and that white supremacists have sort of subverted and now use for their own purposes as this sort of sly signaling of their hateful beliefs.
I mean, let's talk a little bit about what it means to actually be on the list. I mean, is this really being used to track extremism, Heidi, or is it for public awareness? Like, what is the purpose of having a list like this?
Yeah, well, I'm very thankful to the ADL for having compiled this list, because for law enforcement in particular, they need to be able to decode the kinds of alphanumeric symbols that Cynthia was talking about, what they see, for example, visually depicted possibly at hate crime, where hate crimes have occurred. This kind of information is really, really important for white supremacists. It's also important for people who do research on the web about extremist movements, because they need to track these things over time, and that matters. And there's also the issue of when you're celebrating something like, for example, Dylann Roof's bowl cut, that is deeply connected to people who might be becoming radicalized online and on a pathway to violence. So you really need to know what these symbols are and be able to catch them to figure out what's happening out there with white supremacy.
Cynthia, how does something like a haircut in this cut, in this case, the Dylann Roof bowl cut, become a hate symbol? I mean, could you not argue that there are people who are not white supremacists that have that similar haircut? Or, I mean, historically, have these things evolved in that way?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think part of the power of these symbols actually rests on their plausible deniability, meaning that a lot of people use, and the database makes that very clear in a lot of the entries, saying, you know, you have to proceed, any interpretation has to be done with caution. A lot of people use similar sorts of symbols for completely benign reasons, right? And so just because someone gives their kid a bowl cut doesn't mean, you know, of course, in any way that they are, you know, necessarily espousing or believing in any kind of white supremacist extremist beliefs. But when you have, you know, what you have are online kind of a valorization of Dylann Roof's act of terror and the murder of these, you know, innocent worshipers in a church with language like, you know, the bull gang, you know, to symbolize that they are joining, they're part of this, they're valorizing what he did. And so it becomes part of their kind of avatars or their screen names, and then they're sharing those kinds of bull cut images as well. So it's a whole series of memes related to him to celebrate that act. And I think that's the kind of the context in which, you know, parents or teachers or law enforcement could interpret the use of that meme or the use of something that along with something else that indicated kind of potentially hateful beliefs.
Cynthia, I want to talk about the context of these symbols and how we can sort of parse them apart. And again, I'm going to play a clip here from the ADL's Oren Siegel.
For every symbol that we have, it is underscored by the fundamental principle that context is key. So if you see somebody with a Pepe the Frog tattoo or somebody giving the OK symbol, context is needed in order to decide whether that is indeed there for the purposes of hate or whether OK is just OK.
Cynthia, how do you make that determination? How is someone supposed to determine that?
Well, one of the things I always tell is often, you know, I have students who will learn about the kind of work that I do, and then they feel like they're being detectives out on the street looking for somebody wearing a certain brand of sneakers or seeing a certain kind of T-shirt. And I always say, you know, first of all, a single symbol on its own is almost always meaningless unless it's something like the swastika or something very, very clear. But when you start to have multiple contextual clues and you're seeing a symbol in the context of a far right rally or a march in Charlottesville or a flag being waved at that rally, that's where, you know, you have a context, you have actually a hateful event, you have a hateful set of things being said online, and then attached to that is also a set of alphanumeric symbols that are conveying something even more hateful. Those, in those contexts, you know, when you have someone flashing the OK symbol, you know, after having killed 51 people in Christchurch, you know, that kind of context makes it very clear. There are a lot of other settings where it's much less clear and you really can't interpret it in any particular way.
Is there a particular group of people who are most susceptible to being influenced by hate symbols, Cynthia?
I would say young people in general. I think one of the things that appeals to young people is the kind of game-playing nature of these symbols, and the fact that I think a lot of times when you have coded symbols, it can give young people a sense of power and secrecy, and particularly against adults who might be trying to censor or suppress those in a ban, let's say in a school dress code. And so, you know, wearing something on a T-shirt or in a tattoo or just, you know, in a communication sometimes flashed on a in an avatar in a classroom, we've seen that where they use it as a username and they feel like, you know, hey, they're getting one over on adults who don't know what they're doing. And so I think that can be also be kind of a gateway into it, where they're doing it because it's fun. And they're adapting these memes because they're fun and sharing them because they think they're funny. And then the ideological kind of content comes along later.
Heidi, there have been, we talk a lot about social media's role in all this, and I think there have been lots of photos where people are sort of assumed to be flashing the OK symbol, at least, you know, surreptitiously or not. Does this give clarity in any way to that? I mean, can we read into that and say, yes, the person at that congressional hearing, for example, was flashing a white supremacist symbol? Or should we be cautious in how we apply this new list to what we see on social media?
Well, I think you have to be extremely cautious. And this point about context really is everything. I mean, if you don't have indications that the person involved in flashing this sign perhaps has a history in white supremacist movement or extremist movements, you shouldn't ascribe those ideas directly to them. I've had quite a few calls from journalists yesterday saying, here's a person flashing an OK sign. Do you think that this is hate driven? And I've had to say over and over again, if we don't have any more information other than a person depicting this symbol, it is completely unreasonable to assume that they have anything to do with the hate movement or that their intent is to indicate something about white supremacy. So in general, you have to be very, very careful.
And Heidi, you were at a meeting just over a week ago where the Department of Homeland Security released a new strategy where they said they would start focusing on domestic terrorism and really honing in on the extreme right and white supremacist violence. Could the ADL database be useful in those approaches?
There's no question that it will be useful. I mean, this is one of the number one ways that white supremacists self-identify and express themselves. As Cynthia described a minute ago, they sort of like to have this coded language, this inside baseball. We're the ones who know what's going on. The outside world maybe doesn't. So one of the prime indicators, and this has been going on for years and years and years, are whether these symbols are being used. That tells you that white supremacists are gathering. And there's a reason that they're sometimes obscure. It gives that kind of inside baseball nature to the organizations. And I would expect that federal law enforcement will want to understand all of the things that are on the ADL's list, because that's going to be necessary as they go forward in trying to tackle rising white supremacist violence.
Well, and the DHS's overall strategy in terms of combating domestic terrorism has been kind of sporadic. The DHS had a website dedicated to its counterterrorism task force, but the task force itself doesn't exist anymore. I mean, what does that tell us?
Well, look, the DHS basically abandoned serious work on white supremacy about a decade ago. There's been this shift in the federal government after 9/11 for obvious reasons to focusing on terrorism that, you know, is related to Islamic extremism. Meanwhile, we had metastasizing white supremacist violence in this country, attacks like Dylann Roof's, attacks like in the Pittsburgh synagogue, what happened in El Paso. So they're going to have to really refocus their efforts, and they're going to have to staff up and train their people to identify this particular threat in a way that they just simply haven't been doing for a while. I mean, it's a good sign that they're taking it seriously. It's unfortunate that we've had all this violence without a good counter for a very, very long time. So at least the feds are on it now.
Cynthia, is it useful or effective to have an online database or a list of these symbols, and to whom?
Well, I think it's extremely useful. I think it's useful to several different kinds of groups. I mean, first of all, you know, one of the ways that they are escaping kind of algorithmic detection is by using coded symbols. So if those coded symbols become more readily apparent in terms of what their meaning is, then people can report, you know, hateful speech more easily to online companies, to social media companies, but also teachers, parents, local community leaders, law enforcement, mental health counselors, school counselors, anybody really who comes into contact with youth. When you are seeing these kinds of symbols, and as it, you know, they do show up, you know, even there'll be an arson, let's say there was, you know, in Tennessee recently, and then, you know, there was a white supremacist symbol that's on this database, you know, spray painted at the scene. And I think had that symbol not been used very recently by the Christchurch shooter on his gun, it might not have been as quickly recognized as it was. So having a database that makes it clear, something that people can turn to. I mean, there are also experts they can ask, but there's a lot of training up to do. There's a lot of catch-up work to do, as Heidi was saying, given how far behind we are in paying attention to the threat. And so having a database as a place to start will certainly help.
And Heidi, just last question here. What about the role that tech companies can play? Should technology companies be using this ADL catalog to identify potential red flags?
I think the ADL's database is going to be extremely useful for tech companies going forward. There's now actually a consortium called the Global Internet Forum for Counterterrorism that has been used for a long time to identify Islamic extremist symbols and videos and remove them from the web worldwide. They're now going to use that same artificial intelligence system to target white supremacist activities. And the ADL's database gives them the images and the language that will allow them to root out and find white supremacist hate material as they develop these AI systems.
Heidi Beirich is the director of the Southern Poverty Law Center's Intelligence Project, and Cynthia Miller Idris is a professor of sociology at American University. Thanks to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.